And we're back, and that's the voice of the great African-American contralto. Am I right, Phil?
That's right. She's a contralto.
A contralto, Marian Anderson. And when she sings that song, she is a personal side to it, that she wasn't allowed to stay in a hotel in Princeton, and Albert Einstein invited her to come to his home. So she had some troubles, and when he heard about it, he helped out. And I think we're joined by Fred Jerome, the author of The Einstein File. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Phil.
Hey, Fred, that's thanks right. very much for joining us.
That's okay. I should say I love that song, and I love her singing it, and also the great Paul Robeson sang it also beautifully. And he also was a friend of Albert Einstein. More of the story.
Yeah. It seemed very appropriate somehow, because it turns out we spoke to you last week. I want our listeners to know that you have a new updated edition of The Einstein File, the FBI's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist. It has a foreword by Ajamu Baraka and by David Suzuki. Very, very important book, very timely, and we didn't realize how timely it is, because the day after we interviewed you in the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Toronto Star, reprints.
And the Guardian
in Britain.
Yeah.
And the Toronto Star reprinted it. There was a discussion of the publication of a diary kept by Einstein in 1922-23 while aboard ship, I think, and traveling to various Asian ports. And, well, it's a painful thing to look at, because it all turns into, oh, there's another side to Einstein. None of us knew that he harbored opinions. Well, let's get your reaction to this.
Well, it's interesting, because I think the Times, at least, and I'm sure the other papers, the mainstream media as well, seem to love to print stories about well-known people who had a certain had a certain amount of racism. It's almost as if the story that they printed in the Times, the headline was something like Einstein's travel diary teams with racism. Mm-hmm. and stereotyping, there are some comments in his travel diary where he talks about some of the people he sees in China and elsewhere traveling through the Middle East, where he met Marx, are inappropriate and derogatory. And this was in 1940. When he was 42 years old, and he should have known better. And this is in his own travel diary. And I think it had not been known, had not been published. And the Times loves to say, look, even Einstein felt this way, so everybody does. You know, it's their way of doing it. But when it comes to Einstein, I mean, the full story, which I think you have mentioned in the past that I am also co-author with Roger Taylor, of a book called Einstein on Race and Racism, which is also mentioned and quoted in the book that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. The Einstein File, in which we discuss in detail Einstein's outspoken and important stance in this country against racism. Things like he and Paul Robeson co-chaired a group called the American Crusade to End Lynching in 1946, when there were 60, 70 black people lynched in this country, mostly GIs returning from World War II, and many of whom lived in the southern states. So they had fought fascism in World War II and were coming home to states that were still controlled by fascists, and they were lynched before they could get there. And it was a movie called Mudville. I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it, but it describes that story. It's a Hollywood movie. It came out about, I don't know, in the last year. Mm-hmm. It's worth seeing, because it discusses a case of a black GI coming home and being attacked by the racist in this country.
You know, Fred, I can say that I once read in the old days before the internet, I had my copy of the New York Times, and it was a short letter to the New York Times by a black veteran, And he said, I remember the day that I walked down the street in, I think it was Houston, Texas. He said, I was at a station in a nearby base. And he said, I went to a restaurant that had a sign, no blacks allowed. And I looked in the window, and there were German POWs having a meal with their guards.
Absolutely, yeah. That's been reported. And it's not, it's the kind of thing that you probably won't think about it. I mean, because of things like that that happen all the time, including opposition to racism that's being organized and people are doing on a local level that the Times and other mainstream media bother to report. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can give you just one little example, if I don't want to make too big. But there are a group of young people in New York who are young in the sense that they're in their late teens and early 20s, and young men, young women, African-American, white, and other, I mean, generally integrated group. And they've been organizing to try to come up with another phone number people can call in emergencies besides 911. As I guess you know 911, at least in this city. You call 911 if there's any emergency. And what happens almost immediately is the police show up. Mm-hmm. And so these young people are saying, well, we'd like to be able to call some number in the case of an emergency where somebody else will show up, maybe a medical person or somebody. Yes. And so they have been organizing this, and they've been coming up with phone numbers. And actually, you have an organization going on. No one has mentioned this in the New York Times or any of the other mainstream media. It's just one example of many.
Systemic. It's called systemic.
Yeah, systemic.
Including the media. It's systemic that they don't report.
Right. And in our book, Einstein on Race and Racism, we mentioned things like the fact is that Einstein and Robeson organized the anti-lynching crusade in 1946. That thousands of people came to Washington to protest the fact that many black soldiers were being lynched when they came home. Mm-hmm. And the Times did not report that at all. The only way you can find out about it is if you read the African-American press in this country. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true when W.E.B. Du Bois was indicted by the federal government in 1951 when McCarthyism was on the rise in this country, and he was indicted as a foreign agent for failing to register as a foreign agent. And Einstein volunteered to testify on his behalf in federal court. And when the judge heard that, and there were lots of reporters around, the judge dismissed the case because he didn't want that to be big news. That was also not reported by the Times, the fact that Einstein volunteered to do that. And there are many other...
Mm-hmm. You okay? This is the Taylor Report, CAT 89.5 FM. I think we might have lost Fred there. I want to tell you that I found this in the Toronto Star, Sunday, June 12th, and the article was by Christine Phillips. It's very striking to me. Here's a passage. I'll make sure, if we get Fred back, I'm going to ask him about this. It says... it talks about how, you know, he's an outstanding guy. We think of him as a hero, and they say all these things. You know that the but is coming, right? And so, sure enough, third paragraph, fourth paragraph, but there's another side to Einstein that perhaps people did not know then. Well, are you there, Fred?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was entertaining people by reading from the article from Christine Phillips, the Washington Post, carried on to us by the Star. I think the Star, by the way, sometimes reduces these stories so we don't have everything. But I want to ask you, the passage was the but sentence. They have about three paragraphs of patting him on the back, and then they come to but. And there's another side to Einstein that perhaps people did not know then. So in the margin, I wrote, did he know then? Because do you think he thought of himself and you know, as somebody with racial opinions that were, you know, that were contrary to his principles?
Well, when you say
that's a psychological question you can ask yourself.
I'm not sure you're asking, but did who know then?
Did Einstein himself know? I mean, it's so to me, when I read it, I don't see a lot to indict him on. I mean, in other words, if I was the prosecutor, I'd say we don't have much of a case here because he was a scientist. And he was in his core thought, he understood that people of all cultures can do math, for example. And they're indicting him for quoting a man. He's quoting another person who told him, this would be a Portuguese gentleman, told him that the Chinese couldn't do math. Do you think Albert Einstein believed a Portuguese gentleman in terms of the intellectual capacity of the Chinese?
I don't really want to give any leeway to that side of the argument because it's becoming such a big thing now in the West that the so-called populists, the right-wing organizations are all immigrants from other countries, from Asia and Africa and the Middle East. And so I don't want to give them any leeway. I think they know it's wrong, shouldn't happen, and if anybody else if 75 years ago, intentionally or not, it's gone. But on the other hand, when Einstein, organized a protest to stop lynching in this country, nobody mentioned it, and there still is no anti-lynching law in this country. And it hasn't been reported in the press yet. It's only been 75 years. So I think that what's more important not doing, and the fact that when our book came out, it was not mentioned in the New York Times except for a small article only in the New Jersey edition of the Times, which has about 17 readers. And it's not an accident that these things happen. I just think it's important to understand that because Well, I'll give you one more example, and I won't go on, but about 20 years ago, almost exactly 20 years ago today, the Times had asked me to do an op-ed piece about Einstein, and someone had told them I was working on a book, and I did the piece. It appeared in the June, I think, 8th, 1998 edition of the Times. It had to do with Einstein and some letters that accused him of being a spy. He wasn't actually, they weren't valid, but in the course of the piece about Einstein, I mentioned the fact that he was friends with Paul Robeson. And the next day when the piece came out in the Times, Paul Robeson's name had been taken out of the piece, just deleted, without asking. And the editor, his name is Cannon House, and is known as a conservative neocon, I guess he calls himself a neocon. He happened to be speaking at a bookstore near my house the next day, and so I went over and asked him why I took Paul Robeson's name out of my piece, and he said it was too explosive. And that's exactly that. I mean, it was totally. It's not that these things happen. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's where we get the expression, people have their blow their minds. Yes, it would.
Right.
Because it would have been a shock to people to find out.
Right. I think it's not his name that was explosive, and it's not even him as a person who was explosive. It's the ideas that were represented, that he represented, and the struggles that he just took part in, some of which he took part in together with Einstein, and they were friends for 20 years and worked together for 20 years. But you won't read that in any publication, including the Einstein by hundreds of thousands of copies, of the biography of Einstein a few years ago. It's something they leave out.
Yeah, I'm sure that in the neoliberal mind, they thought they were doing him a favor. Help him.
Okay.
Airbrush his history in order to help his memory.
I suppose, except I think it's not an accident. Yeah. I mean, they know, and in that book that I mentioned by Stanley Isaacson, which is the one Paul Einstein, he quotes from from stuff that I've written on other things, but not. But Paul Robeson's name is
yeah. This is Fred Jerome, and he's the author of The Einstein File, The FBI's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist, and it has it's a new, updated edition. It has forward by Ajamu Baraka, Green Party vice presidential candidate, and David Suzuki, Canadian scientist, who's suffered a little grief for being a scientist and telling the truth about the environment. Fred, if I could, you had the book on Einstein on views on Israel and Zionism, and in that book, it's a wonderful collection of his speeches, letters, and commentary, and interviews with people. We want to, in my view, establish some things that come out of that book, such as he reached out to other cultures. He reached out to people who were being sealed off, you might say. You're the one who revealed to the world that he actually contacted Egyptian media, the most important newspaper in Egypt, and the famous editor Heichel came to his house, right?
Heichel was actually in New York at the time. This was back in 1949, I think. It's in my book, and I can't get all the dates right exactly, but he was in New York with the Egyptian delegation, and it was after 1950, but Nasser had already come to power in Egypt, and Heichel went to New York with the UN delegation, and someone said, "Well, if you're in New York, you're going to go see Einstein." And so he called up, and Einstein said, "Yeah." He said, "Let's, by all means." And he was sort of shocked. He had no idea. He hadn't planned to do an interview, but he did.
And Einstein was looking for solutions between the Israelis and the Arab people.
Right. I think we're getting, hello?
Yes. Can you hear us?
I was hoping we're not going to get cut off again. But
no,
but there are a lot of things in that book, in letters, Einstein's letters that he wrote to people criticizing Israel and in opposition to the idea of a Jewish state, which had never been reported. And I see that Israel has now set up an Einstein museum in the city of Jerusalem, claiming that Einstein is a big pro-Israel person. Just not true. Mm-hmm. But I think that's part of the game that they're playing.
Yeah, and apropos of this discussion in the book with the diaries, is a reference to his attitudes towards quote Eastern people. But also in your book on Einstein and Israel, Zionism, et cetera, there I saw a letter he wrote. I think it would have been the late 20s, early 30s. No, mid-20s, actually. And he was saying to Westerners, why do we have this poisonous attitude towards people coming from the East, from Russia, Poland, who are escaping persecution?
Right.
And he says everybody talks about them as dirty and illiterate, and not true Europeans. I remember that vividly from your book.
I think that it's interesting because that particular trip that Einstein wrote the travel diary, he got all these headlines. He was on a ship and he was going to China and the Middle East. I think it was 1921 or 1922. Are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah. The reason it was at that time he had won the Nobel Prize. He did not go to pick up the Nobel Prize personally, but he stayed and went on the trip to the Far East and Middle East instead. And the question would be, why didn't he go to Norway to get the Nobel Prize?
Yes.
And in fact, he had been nominated for the Nobel Prize something like 9 or 10 times and not received it, precisely because the Nobel Prize Committee was made up of people who were
not
anti-Jewish.
Like him.
Yeah. Anti-Jewish.
Yes.
And they didn't want to give it to a Jewish scientist or what they called them, then called for Jewish science, which is what the Germans
the Nazis labeled. That. Yes.
Yeah. So it the history of this is sort of ironic that he was himself a victim and continues to be a victim, really, in the sense of mm-hmm. his true feelings not being reported.
Mm-hmm. What it does, it seems to me, it calls for a serious look at him. And you've pointed out to us in previous interviews and in your books, there are shelves of books about him who don't talk about Robeson, who do not talk about Marian Anderson, do not talk about W.E.B. Du Bois.
Right.
And the FBI's hunting him down.
Right. And you should mention also that he became good friends with dozens of people who lived in the black community in Princeton who are not famous African-Americans. Some of whom are still alive. They were teenagers back at that time, and some of them are still friends of mine and my wife's, and we still visit them in Princeton when we go. They're now closer to our age than they are our age, but at the time they were teenagers, mm-hmm. and they remember Einstein. And these are people who lived in the black community then, and maybe and still do. In some cases, they still do. And Einstein would come and sit on the porch on their porch, and talk to their parents. Every time he would walk through the community on his way to the hospital, which is like the direct route from his house to the hospital where he would go for checkups. And all of this was never reported before our book. And the fact that he wasn't just friends with some famous people, he was friends with folks in the community.
I'm sorry, who? What's that?
But he was friends with folks, with people.
Yes,
in the black community, at one point he stopped in at the public school of the black community. There was a meeting of the NAACP, and he joined the NAACP. It's in his letters report on it, and the only other place where it's reported is in J. Edgar Hoover's FBI file.
Yes,
where that's the dangerous thing that Einstein did.
Well, Einstein definitely identified himself, according to FBI standards, as a communist when he invited Marian Anderson to his home, because the FBI right. considered that the clear sign of somebody who was a communist.
Right, and the she writes about it in her autobiography, which is called "Oh Lord, What a Morning," and she says that she decided after she stayed at the house once that they would always be friends, and she stayed there every time she went back to Princeton. As long as he was alive.
It wasn't a one-off or a symbolic.
Exactly.
A photo
exactly.
op.
You're right. And there are many things like that. I just think that what's interesting is that the of 19, of almost 100 years ago, which has a few items in it, it becomes headline news in all of these
yes.
things.
Yeah. Well, the last point, if you're still with us there, are you there, Fred?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for hanging on. It sounds like a desperate conversation we're having, but you're doing very well. One last point I want to make is he didn't see an east-west world or a north-south world. He advocated world government, and he did that because he wanted to help all of humanity avoid wars and to develop themselves.
He did have an idea that if the world could get together, the governments could get together, peace, that they could prevent war.
I think we lost you that time. Can you hear me? Well, it's been fun. I think what we'll do, and Fred will forgive us, we'll play Marian Anderson and we'll get out of here. This is the Taylor Report. CIUT 89.5 FM, and Jessica will make sure all this happens.